because there really is no moat anymore around AI. Investors don't want to hear that, but I'm like, there's so many tools out there.
You want to serve underserved. And so how has this new technology helped you achieve that?
We're focused right now on enterprise. These are institutions that are already in communities. I don't want to see community banks closing.
And if you want to give advice to those who have maybe a vision, but not, they're not very technical minded, what piece of advice would you give them?
One is, and I think this is true of almost any startup, which is,
today we're talking about creating financial access, and a big part of that access is accessibility. Ramona Ortega knows firsthand that the agentic AI workflow is a fintech game changer. That's why it's a huge part of what she does at WealthBuild AI, a company that is helping underserved communities build wealth one user at a time. Ramona, thank you so much for joining us at AI in Action. So you started WealthBuild on your own, by yourself. What was your hope? What did you want to build with WealthBuild?
Yes, I did start by myself, but this is my second rodeo. And so I started a company many years ago called My Money, My Future. That was really focused on financial education. So this is a natural flow from that first company. And so when I started looking around at what was happening in fintech, this was sort of after that first big phase of fintech, you had a lot of great companies that created access to things like investing apps, sort of life insurance that was easy to sign up for. There was a lot of access points. And I said, okay, this is great, but we're still missing financial advice. Like, where do people turn to for financial advice? And that was a problem that I was trying to solve in my first company, but the technology wasn't there. Fast forward, 2021, 22, I was looking around. I was like, okay, this is interesting. I've seen a lot more happening in the AI space. And so I started the company with the idea of democratizing financial advice. How do we get better financial advice, personalized financial advice, into the hands of more people? We have institutions that do that very well, but because of the model, it's a very one-to-one financial advisor model. And that in and of itself becomes a challenge, right? You can't scale yourself. So how do we create access in a way that's scalable and that institutions can use to better serve their clients? And so that was sort of the genesis. And so while I started alone and sort of really thinking about what that product would look like and who we would sell to, again, because I've already been in the space, I kind of knew from get that I had to build a really strong technical team. I had to build with a team that understood that this is going to be a problem that is changing, that the technology would be changing. So a really adaptive team. So I went back to a lot of the folks that I had worked with at My Money, My Future and sort of said, okay, I put a call out literally on a Slack channel of developers. And I said, hey, I'm looking for folks who are interested in building an AI and financial services. I really want folks who are interested in getting experience in AI. This is very early days. And so ended up getting a couple of folks that I talked to, one of which I really liked, and I invited him essentially to become my co-founder and CTO, someone who has built infrastructure and architecture, because I'm much more of a product person. I kind of understand the end product, but I needed someone to understand the enterprise infrastructure. And so he was doing that, Danny Comeau. He was also was military. So I love that because it also, as a veteran, he brings so much leadership skills already to the table, right? And so really understanding how to work in teams. Because I think in terms of a builder, I'm someone that's like, I want your ideas. Like, I have a vision and I'm asking my team to bring ideas to the table. And so that's how we kind of co-founded the company. And then each of us have brought in team members to fill in slots for marketing and sales and junior developers. But that's how we got started.
I think the two things that really stuck out to me is you started with education, right? With the first company.
Correct.
Which I think really laid the groundwork for something like this. Because correct. I think having that basis for your app, like at least the knowledge of how to educate people on finances, really lends itself to something like WealthBuild. And the other thing, you anticipated the way that AI is going to be moving. There's no way you could have anticipated what it became today.
No.
But having someone who's adaptable, like someone who's able to say, like, listen, we're looking for people who want to learn as well as build is huge.
Absolutely. And that was a piece, I think, in terms of our going forward, is that our ability to be agile.
Definitely.
We have already been through essentially 3 to 4 phases of AI from a technical perspective. And I'm not just talking us, I'm talking anyone who's been in this space. Some of the, we use a lot of open source stuff early on. The changes in AI technology and the tools in which to build applications on top of AI at this point are changing almost every quarter.
You need someone who has a vision to how to use these incredibly powerful tools. And so I want to really talk about your initial vision, this idea of serving the underserved, right? Like people who, and I can speak from experience, you know, I grew up not great. I didn't know anything about finances. I didn't have a credit card until I was 30, which is very embarrassing. But I wish I had something like this. I wish I had some way, because a lot of people learn from their family. And when coming from immigrants, they didn't have any idea of finances.
That's right.
So this vision of yours, this is like, that was the genesis, like you
it's
said.
It's always been my genesis. I think it's the passion in which I deploy everything I do. So I wear a lot of hats. I'm also a lawyer. And I still do a lot of work in emerging managers and VC work, because I think capital across the spectrum is super important, especially for folks who've been underserved or overlooked by traditional financial institutions. But here's the thing. It's not only good for institutions because they've left money on the table because they haven't went after those folks.
So you saw an option. You saw an opportunity here.
This is both an arbitrage opportunity, but also one that creates impact, right? So the more people that have access to financial services and good financial advice, the more wealth that's created across communities, it's good for the economy, period. Right?
Yeah.
And we have a changing demographic. So the lens in which that we look at is, it's sort of anyone who's been underserved or overlooked, right? That could be women, it can be communities of color, it could be just sort of middle class folks. There's so many communities that haven't been tapped into for good wealth management services. We really want to demystify that and that's the education that's kind of built into the AI, right? And we'll get to this in a minute. But so you got that, and you have just sort of a phenomena of folks not being comfortable with finance. And that's almost everyone except for like sort of the finance bros, right? Like when you look at me, I will say nobody thinks Wall Street, but I was a Wall Street attorney. That's really the genesis of a lot of this, right? And so I realized early on that I want to make sure that people have access to information to make the best decisions for them. And there's a lot of barriers, and some of those barriers can be solved with technology.
So let's talk about a little bit about the technical foundation. Well, not to get too deep into it, but you started with a different version of AI or a different world of AI, right? Like everything was different when you started. And that pivot, when did you start that pivot?
I mean, we've pivoted about 3 times, even though the end product was always sort of clear in my mind, right? And that guides everything we do. Are we giving people better access to financial services and advice? And are we making it easy to do that? I mean, that's sort of the line that runs through all of the products. What we're doing now is retrieval augmented generative AI. So you'll hear RAG, when we were one of the first to really talk about RAG, RAG-based agentic workflows, AKA, you know, AI workflows for financial services. So the first iteration that we were working with was essentially just the generative, right? So now we've gone from generative to agentic. In between, there was a lot of other things that were happening. So RAG was in between that. So we were one of the first to really talk about RAG. And the reason is because I come out of financial services and compliance, right? As a lawyer, you're always looking at SEC rules or, you know, all kinds of regulatory environments. And so from day one, I knew that we would have to have something that ensured that the agent would be able to be compliant. So that's a huge part of, one, why we went with IBM because of the Watson governance. But two, we wanted to make sure that this was going to be something that we can sell into enterprise. We knew that would be an advantage. And so, you know, we went from sort of basic chatbots using AI to, you know, RAG-based chatbots to agentic workflows. And now I feel like we have hit the applied AI space. Because before, I think there was a lot of just sort of, okay, it's fun, it's generative, but generative AI can only do so much. That's almost like, that's the low-hanging fruit, right? And so as we started to move into where we're at now, the RAG is incorporated because what we're allowing people to do is use their own knowledge base, their own policies, their own data. And we sit on top of that and then create agentic workflows that help them interact with customers, do deeper engagement, you know, clean data, make it useful. There's a whole bunch of things that we can do inside of our system that we build out for enterprises. This is where the magic happens, is that I think the technology is now at the place where I will say you've got AI, APIs, and blockchain. So I'm still a blockchain girl. So those three, in terms of just a technology environment, huge, I think, to move us to the next phase of like, okay, builders, what are we going to solve?
That was a big part for me too. Like LLMs, generative AI is the coolest thing, right? When we got it a couple of years ago, like, oh my God, it could answer anything. And then when you start really looking at it, and especially from a compliance perspective, you're like, wait, this sounds perfectly reasonable, but it isn't.
But it's wrong,
right?
Or it's not updated.
Exactly, right? Because initially the models were dated right, like the years before. And so When we started applying the agentic framework, and you're able to govern what they're saying, and you make a query and it comes back, and then you have another agent being like, make sure this is compliant. That's when we realized, at least from the builder level,
right,
that we're like, wow, we're here. Now all of a sudden, this tool is the most powerful tool any of us have ever seen.
Right.
And it's so exciting. As like a technology, I'm sure the same for you. It's just like every day it changes. Every day there's a new tool. And like you mentioned MCP, and all of a sudden you have these agents that are able to call APIs. They're able to do real work on the back end, which is just, I think, is the coolest thing.
And I would say that this year, 2026, I think we're going to see more complexity built into agentic. So even nowadays, I hear people talking about agentic and I'm like, oh, they're talking about an agent. They're actually not talking about agentic. Like, so for me, an agent is a one or two steps. Like it can generate copy and then do one thing, right? It can send an email with that copy. That's an agent. Agentic is 6, 7, 8 steps. Grab something from your CRM, use this database and this knowledge base to create a report, send it to someone for approval, and then create content based on that. I mean, right, so that's an agentic workflow. So I'm always looking at how far out we can take the process. And I think that's where we're going to see a lot of improvement in the ability to do that. Agentic workflows are just sort of, you know, updated robotic processing, right? For all of our folks who've been in this space for a long time, LLMs have been around for a long time. The foundational stuff has been there, but the tool set to allow developers and founders to use those tools to build new applications, that's where like it opens up a huge new world for us.
At the beginning, you have this company, you bring in the CTO and you say, okay, we have to find partners. What was the thought process to find those technology partners?
Yeah, absolutely. How do we arrive at IBM, right? Like I said, we did do a lot of open source in the beginning because I actually knew that, like, I was like, oh, this thing is moving quickly. Let's play first. Let's figure out what our test product looks like, right? So we did a lot of open source. We were using different tools, and that's actually still part of the process.
Of course.
Is testing out new tools, testing out new environments. And so we came to IBM, and this is kind of a funny full circle story. My first company, we were sitting in this co-work space called Galvanize. IBM's Watson team was also there. And so they were literally like the office over. And so I was always like, oh, that's really cool. That actually could be something we can use. Except that at that time, you'd have to have a huge development team to be able to access that. And so that was just not where we were at the time. So fast forward, when I started the company, one of the first places I looked was Watson. I wanted to see, you know, what's new, how are people using it? And I think we got a lot of sort of like, oh, okay, there's some tools out there now that are going to allow us to build and test in rapid prototyping, because that's actually what we needed to do at that time. So we ended up coming to IBM for that reason, because I really liked their assistance. And here's why. It was a very particular reason. early days of ChatGPT, as you know, you ask it questions. So I would ask it, like, how do I start investing? And it would give me this very general, like, sort of, here's things you do. But it didn't do anything for it for me. It also didn't ask me any questions to determine, am I already an investor? Do I already have a 401k? Right. So it's not, it wasn't a multi-step conversation.
And it wasn't personal either.
It wasn't personalized and it wasn't multi-step. So there was a lot of things I was like, no, I need it to be, I need to have this ability to create a pathway, right? So I need to ask you some questions before I answer, right? And so if I was thinking about as a financial advisor, what would you ask someone first? You're going to ask a bunch of questions and then you're going to answer the question. And so I wanted the technology to do that. We ended up finding that in the Watson Assistant initially. And then we obviously got introduced to a bunch of the other tools and frameworks. But we also integrate with a bunch of other platforms.
Of course.
We have a bunch of third-party platforms that we use for API integration, for you know, storage, cloud servicing. You know, there's a lot of pieces that go into enterprise AI. And I think that's what people often fail to realize. There are so many tools out there. So you can, yes, everybody can access AI. Building tip for AI for enterprise still requires all of the internal infrastructure, like building any other app.
And even with all these powerful tools, you're still going to, you know, run into hurdles and obstacles. Can you tell me some of those, like some that stand out? Like this was like something maybe you didn't even anticipate you would hit.
One is, I already mentioned, the data profiles, right? So going into a company and asking them, okay, like, so one of the ways that I tend to open up a conversation with a client is, what would you hire for right now? Like, what is your need? And can we replace that with an agentic workflow, right? So we don't like to displace, we like to integrate into your platform, right? So we're not taking away people, but we can probably help you scale without adding more people right now. And so when we go through that conversation, one of the things that we're looking at is, what is the data stack? Because for almost all of those agentic workflows, you're going to need to call data and send data out to something else, right? Some other CRM or a database. Is it structured in a way that we can actually use it and just plug and play? For most, that's a no. So there's a whole layer of work that has to happen to clean that data or to get it integrated, right? You might have data over here. You have unstructured data in PDFs. You have, you know, a data in a data lake, maybe. So there's just all kinds of scenarios where we can't just say, oh, okay, here's our tool, use it, without understanding what their data profiles are. So that's one thing. The other that's become a lot more complicated than I thought is the multi-tenant infrastructure. So lots of AI, especially off the shelf, great for you, your company. So if you're a company, you want to buy that AI and use it, you could probably do that. What we're building is that we need to have an infrastructure to have many clients. So things like MCP are huge for us, right? To understand, how do we get all of those client, you know, data sources, passwords. There's so much infrastructure that has to come into play for security, for segmenting clients and the AI and their knowledge bases, right? So building that infrastructure has been a little bit more complicated than I thought. I think that's something that we're going to see across the board with AI companies.
You're going to need a way to have access control and security and all this stuff when you're dealing, the word agent and agentic, the source is agency. You're right. Giving a piece of code agency to do something.
Correct.
Out of your hands. You're like, we need this accomplished. Let's give this, and so you have to have those controls. And I think that's going to be for every enterprise. They're going to run into this, because there's no way you can use this incredibly powerful tool and not have access control, not have security, not have guardrails. These are huge things, right, that have to be solved for.
I mean, one that we're working on right now. So for example, you know, we use RAG at the corporate level, right? So if you have PDFs or corporate documentation, we have that. Then we have this agent that's like kind of RAG on demand. Right. So you can upload, let's say you're working on something and you're like, I need this to be summarized. So you just want to upload your own document, but you want it to be sort of in line with your guidelines. So RAG on demand, that's great. But like, now we got to segregate that out as its own data source, right? On the fly, you know, right? So we're just talking about a lot of computing power, right? A lot of cloud power that you need to make sure that all of these agents are working in tandem, because each one of them is essentially taking or being a worker for that company. So it's got to be able to be maintained and secure.
There's this philosophy that I'm trying to implement on my internal team when we start building agents, that to keep the complexity of an individual agent really low, like do not make a complex individual agent. What you mentioned right at the beginning is exactly what I've been trying to do, which is you have a workflow of many agents that do a complex task, but their individual components are simple. And that way you really have this ability to control what they're doing, or at least have vision into seeing, because in between the input and the output of an agent is a black box to everybody. You don't see it's going to the LLM, it spits out a response. But if you're able to govern each of those along that process, it becomes all of a sudden, okay, now this is a repeatable task that we can call this set of like 10 agents to do.
Right.
And that's what you really have to start thinking about.
And that's why I brought in a CTO that has the ability to think about architecture. So it's like that architecture is code, right?
Yep.
CI/CD pipelines.
Definitely.
It's all in Python. You know, so it's that you can manage that type of segmented security issues. And there's so many things that go into what may seem like a simple agent. Again, because people are using ChatGPT and they're like, oh, it can do all of these things. So we get this a lot, right? And this is maybe something that I didn't foresee, which is now AI is everywhere. Yep. So we're going in talking to a client. They're like, oh, but I already have this built into, you know, we have Copilot or we have the Salesforce agents. What people don't understand is how AI works, right? There's a lot of like, we use AI, we have AI, we're implementing AI. AI is many things, right? And so they may use a Copilot, but it's not an agentic workflow. There's a difference. Or they're using only, you know, maybe a generative AI tool. They're not understanding that it can do much more complex things. And so a lot of what we do, I think, initially with clients is actually somewhat of AI education. And in fact, that is a pipeline into our sales right now, is that we're doing a lot of sort of seminars or workshops for large associations. So that way they can then essentially become our customers later on.
So you build these agentic workflows for your clients, but internally, do you use agentic workflows inside Wealth Build?
Yeah, absolutely. And literally a lot of our use cases comes from things that I'm worried about or I'm focused on, right? And so we are actually working on agentic workflows inside of our own system. I mean, anything from sales, right? I mean, this is a perfect sales flow, agentic workflow, right? CRM, send emails. So I always joke, I'm like, this should be an agent. This when I'm doing something and I have a little notebook, like I'm jotting down like, oh, let's create an agent that just does this. Because back to your point, the way that you build for enterprise is that it can't just be all custom work. I mean, then it's not scalable, right? So what we're building is essentially a library of autonomous workers in a vertical. So I know this vertical, wealth management, financial services, and even in more particular, we are focused on financial services and wealth management that are client focused. And the distinction I'm making here is that there's a lot of AI companies that are working on back-end stuff, you know, underwriting tools, algorithms for trading. You know, we're not doing that. Our focus is how do we help financial services grow their impact or their market share using AI? How do we better serve end clients using agents, right? So that's, and that comes back to our impact. The impact is how does that end user benefit, right? So if we want to increase wealth management services or financial advisors in communities that have been underserved, we're going after those folks and we're building the products that sort of a solve for those challenges.
Have you seen any changes in like the customer service workflow with agentic AI?
Sure. I mean, I think we're taking customer service to customer engagement. That's the way I think about it. Because, you know, look, customer service AI agents actually have been around for a while. But what they don't do is that they're not walking people through to the next decision. It's generally give me information. You know, I need my account balance, or I need to, what are your hours, or, you know, whatever sort of customer service inquiry. And that's huge. And there's nothing, I mean, that's a huge problem that's being solved. And I think there's lots of companies that are doing that. What we're looking at, though, is not just customer service, but how do you get customer, maybe they're coming to your site and because they need, oh, do you offer bank? Do you offer CDs? Yes. And would you like to know more about our CDs? Yes. Okay. What are you looking for? What are your goals? Like, there's, how do you actually take the place of a human in that conversation? Because humans generally will have an additional set of questions. Right. If you're a good salesperson, you're going to try to sell something else. They're coming for one thing and you're going to sell them something else. And I think that's the engagement piece. So not only are you collecting data on your customers without having to do a survey, because no one wants surveys. So you're getting real time data and you're moving them through a process. So they're getting value out of that conversation without having to do anything. And from a customer experience perspective, I think that getting that value up front is really important.
I think something's interesting about this, because you're saying, like, you're having follow-up questions during the while they're communicating with your agent. And something that's really interesting is that 5 years ago, the way I would interact with an agent like this would be, I would be thinking, okay, what's the decision tree? How do I get to where I need to
Correct.
Go? One word answers. But now that it's so ubiquitous, people realize that you can speak naturally to an agent. And now with agents, like the agentic workflow, you can actually discern meaning and action from very broad sentences, which makes this, it's just the perfect time to do this.
Right. It's the sort of turning point. It's the magic, right? But also, when you need deterministic workflows, you can still build that in.
Yep, absolutely.
Because not everything, especially in financial services, is undeterministic. In fact, you have a lot of things that have a real, like, I'm going to ask you a set of questions and then there's going to be some set answers, or there's a pathway down this, you know, there's a real pathway that we need you to follow. So that's important too, because I think while ChatGPT, you can just sort of ask it anything, it can, you know, it can feel like a lot of rabbit holes, right? And in financial services, we're trying to move someone from point A to B, right? I always tell my team, we're solving a problem for someone. Right. So customers coming to that bank and they want information, they want to do something, they want that sort of experience to solve their problem. So how do we do that? Right. How do we get them the information they need? And then how do we get them to that next step to take action? Right. So if someone's asking about investing, I don't want to just be like, theoretically, here's what investing is. I want to say, OK, you're interested. How do we get you from here to opening an investment account?
Yeah. And we need this information from you, because that's where you have that deterministic aspect. Right. And that the hybrid of the deterministic
right.
and the agent, I think, is brilliant. That's the way you have to do it.
Yeah. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah, because there's a lot of things where we need you to fill out these 1, 2, 3 steps. We need to know this stuff before we could give you any kind of reasonable and actionable answer.
Correct.
So that's really, I'm really happy to hear that that's being used, because this is stuff my team and I would be like, we can't just do straight agents for everything. We need that deterministic.
No, that's right. Especially in financial services.
Oh, yeah, I bet. So let's go back to your mission. All right. You want to serve underserved. And so how has this new product or this new technology helped you achieve that?
So in two ways, the way that we think about it, like I said, and that we're focused right now on enterprise, because these are institutions that are already in communities. So it's kind of it's solving two problems. One is, and this came out of just my fintech days generally, is that you were looking at community banks, CDFIs, credit unions who are being disrupted by fintech. This was early days, right? We had those conversations. But even now more so, because AI is allowing folks to scale so much, so rapidly, right? And so if they're not at the place to adopt this technology, they're really going to be left behind. I don't want to see community banks closing. I don't want to see credit unions closing. I want them to have more access to people in their community, because that's a real institution, right? It's a great institution. So how do we enable them to be in this play, right? How do we give them access to tools to help them compete in this new environment? So that's sort of one challenge. And we are directly addressing that challenge by going to associations. And this is my point, and saying, hey, all of your credit unions or all of your institutions actually need this support. Let's talk about sort of a one-to-many strategy. So that's one piece. The other is for the larger institutions is how do we help them go after a new audience at scale? And how to save the money to do that, right? Because that was always the challenge, is that financial services, especially wealth management, the model itself, it was an expensive model, right? A client needs to have a certain amount of assets under management because that's how advisors get paid, right? And so if you're a young person, I mean, you know, you don't have that many assets.
None.
Shoot, you might even be in your 40s and not have many assets, right?
I feel attacked. All right, continue.
And that's okay. But you still need good financial advice. And I would argue, actually, you need better financial advice to be able to build those assets. And so for us to be able to work with larger institutions and give them a tool that says, okay, with this technology, with this set of agents, we actually can 5X our ability to serve clients, which means we can take on maybe other types of clients, right? And that's the whole, or maybe we create a whole new division to go after new markets, young markets, and we're going to be able to use this technology to do that. And for them, you know, and especially for a lot of the more traditional financial institutions, they have to adopt this because this new generation expects it, right? And this is not even a diversity question. This is just, if you look at the market, one, it is diverse, right? Just the new market's diverse. But second, they're also highly like digitized in every part of their life. And they're going to expect that same kind of experience at any financial institution that they interact with. They're not going to call you. Right? You still have people like, well, you know, submit this form or give us a call. No one's calling you. If they're like 30, they're not calling you.
And you think about like the credit unions, like let's say my mom opened up my first account at a credit union.
That's right.
And this is the one I have. And now I'm expecting it to have these capabilities that it just doesn't have yet. And so this is the market that you're looking for as well.
Right. And that's for us, that's part of that mission, is just like, let's empower those community financial institutions to do their best work. One of the other wins that we haven't quite nailed yet, and this will be over time, we believe that by using our technology and using AI generally in a lot of the financial services sector, but particularly for community credit unions, CDFIs, is that they're going to identify new revenue lines. By using this technology, one, it's going to help them see their data in sort of more holistically. They're going to be able to use that data to say, oh, we might need a new product here. This is what we're seeing, and be able to react to that in real time. And that in and of itself is going to create a better bottom line.
So what's left for wealth? Well, seriously,
so many things.
The problems that you're looking to solve, like what's left? Like you're, it sounds like you're doing, I know you mentioned the direct consumer.
That's the big one.
That's the big one.
That has always been my mission, even in my first company. So that direct to consumer, call it an agent, you know, we'll probably want to create a whole persona around this agent. It's a very simple thing though. Even now, if you ask a majority of people, who do you turn to for financial advice?
Me personally?
No, but like just anyone. Very few people have someone.
No one, yeah.
I mean, the 1%, obviously they have their financial advisors. Wealthy people generally will have their financial advisors. We're talking about sort of
people.
Everyone else.
And their dad, their mom, anybody.
Like, who do they go to? Who do they trust? So we really want to create that product, that agent, if you will, that people can turn to for trusted financial advice that's personalized. It takes away some of the shame that people have around questions. And then matches them to the right products. And so we don't necessarily need to build those products. We need good partnerships, right? And we're already building those. And the API integration allows us then to take it to the next level. So not only are we giving you that advice and education in the conversation, it's built in, but then we're also allowing you to take that next step and open that account. Like that guided experience around financial products is the missing link. And that's really, for me, what's left. And it's going to take another couple of years, I think, to get it right. I think we're going to try to launch something in Q2 as a pilot. There's a lot of compliance issues.
Of course.
It's not even about the AI. It's the compliance. It's the security. So there's a lot of things around that that need to be in place.
How do you build trust? Like you said, you want these people to look at this application and this product and be like, I trust what it's saying. How do you build that?
I think it's twofold. One is, as the leader of the company, one of the things that I think I've done in my community and in the spaces that I move in is to build trust as someone who understands finance and who's not going to screw you, essentially, right? Because I think there is a lot of trust. It's that, you know, if I'm saying, hey, look, this product actually can be of service to you. This is how you need to think about it. I think being honest with people and meeting them where they are, that's the other thing. The trust is you understand me because you're saying things that resonate with my experience. And I think that's something that we try to embed in our marketing and our messages, where we go, who we talk to, right? So going to those conferences that other fintechs are not going to meet with communities or coalitions that we think there's an opportunity. So being in places where other folks don't show up, I think builds that trust as
well.
Like
a grassroots. It almost feels like grassroots, right? Like you're going to the communities. You don't have the name recognition that the big financial services companies have. And so you go directly to the people and you personally are talking to the people and trying to build the trust through that.
Right.
That's
right.
Awesome.
I think brand is like, and authenticity is the new currency. Yes, especially for financial services and a new demographic, like the new market. That's huge. They want authenticity in terms of like, what are you selling me? How much does it cost? What does it do for me? Right. So there's that authenticity of just being transparent. But then there's also the authenticity of, hey, I'm letting you know this is what you need because I know your situation. I know you're a single mom. I'm telling you, life insurance is the best thing for you to do to ensure that you have long-term security for your child. Like, that's a very different narrative than me as a broker coming in saying, oh, hey, here's a bunch of life insurance products without having any connection to why it's important. And that's just the storytelling of it all.
So AI is great. We all love it. Okay, seriously, like everyone, agentic AI is super powerful, but what currently isn't working for you? Like, is there something like you're saying, okay, obviously this is so good, but what is that one thing?
I think there's still a lot of challenges with enterprise multi-tenant connectivity, right? Super good if you're an individual using AI, great. A company using AI, still a lot of challenges because now you're talking about getting IT on board, integrating with all of the other applications that you're already using, the data sources that you're using, are they clean and do they fit into this workflow process? Are you ready for AI? I mean, is it actually going to be of value to you? That's the other thing. And that's something that we're seeing a lot come up and part of the way that we're engaging right now. And I don't think this will be forever, but right now it's kind of doing an audit. So it's an AI audit before, right? So saying, okay, what do you have? What are your challenges? What are you trying to solve for to make sure that we're not just selling something that's going to sit on their platform and no one uses it? Because we've been hearing that. And that's, I think, something that we got to be careful of in AI generally is that we're not just selling AI to companies and then no one adopts it, right? And then AI is going to start getting a bad rap. Right? Because it's not cheap. And they're like, well, I could have just done this by hand or manually, or just, you know, I could have done it the old fashioned way. And it's just as quick, right? So we got to make sure that there's an ROI.
So your story, for me at least, and I'm sure for many other people, is very inspiring. And if you want to give advice to those who have maybe a vision, but they're not very technical minded, or maybe they're very technical minded, but they don't know where to start, what piece of advice would you give them?
One is, and I think this is true of almost any startup, which is solve a real problem, or at least for me. Like that, granted, there are companies that solve things that no one has even imagined, right? So, you know, sometimes that happens. But ideally, you're solving a real life problem for someone. And I think that that drives sales because you can build something that is technically amazing and not have adoption, right? Because it's either not solving someone's problem, or you don't know how to sell it, Right. And I think even with us, I think the one thing that we're good at is trying to really hone in on what the problem is that they're trying to solve and why that problem being solved is actually really beneficial for their bottom line. That's key. And then having a lot of curiosity. I think that's going to be another piece is like, it's not just about AI. Because AI at some point is just going to be like the internet, right? It's going to be like, okay, and what are you building on top of that? How are you differentiating what you're building? Because there really is no moat anymore around AI. Investors don't want to hear that. But I'm like, there's so many tools out there. And even companies that we used 3 years ago, that I'm like, oh, are they even around anymore? Because they became obsolete. Essentially, because there's just so many more new tools out there, or somebody solved this sort of higher edge case, like an MCP. I mean, it's solved for a lot of things. Yeah,
tremendous amount of things instantly.
Which made other companies
obsolete. Yeah, this is going to happen.
And this is happening, though, in real time and quickly. So you've got to be someone that's okay with moving at that speed.
And what I really like is, first of all, having, like you said, you have the vision. You have to be creative. Because again, we mentioned right at the beginning of this that you have these tools, you have to come up with a creative way of using it. Now, I think the hardest thing that you mentioned is actually recognizing a real problem. I think a lot of tech-minded people, like if I was going to start a company, the real problem I would be trying to solve is so niche just for me. It's just like, I love this technical stuff. I'm going to basically create a problem to solve with the technology. Right. So I think that's probably the most difficult.
For enterprise, right?
Yeah.
Look, I think the application across the board for individual use cases, what's great is you can now go build that. I always tell people, go build your own GPT. I mean, that's so easy, right? I mean, you don't have to really be technical to do that. Or you can use all kinds of platforms now that allow you to create agents for yourself. So you should totally do that. And I use it. I kind of have 2 to 3, you know, I mean, I use all of them, right? Because they do different things, right? And so in my workload, I'm using it all the time, but I'm also keeping in mind that the human in the loop is still important. And I know we didn't talk about that, but it actually is really important. And one of the things that we're really thinking about, especially as it relates to RAG and our direct-to-consumer, is putting together a kind of a tribunal, if you will, of knowledge around financial services, because that's going to help us build the best knowledge base possible. And so keeping that human in the loop, like, is this the right answer? You know, and I think that's something that we're going to see a lot more of is that sort of reinforced learning around the models. The other piece that's important, and it's not just for us, but for everyone in AI, is that you're going to see a lot more verticalization of the models themselves, right? Domain-specific models, fine-tuning of models, the capabilities around that are going to get better. That's the kind of the next phase is being able to say, for example, for us, we would love to have our own foundational model focused on personal finance. So like that's something that's like in the back of my head, right? It's like, I'm sort of like, okay, that would be cool because then you would have this knowledge base that's being updated, that's current. It's like the best thinking around personal finance. And from that, you can build all kinds of applications on top of.
Ramona, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being on AI in Action. And to all of you listening, please subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And I'll see you next time.